If there's one thing I loved about old Nickelodeon, it was reruns of stuff from prior decades. And boy, howdy, when they made a remake of a rerun that I never saw, oh, I was on board. Put on your official security officer's hats, because we are talking about The Tomorrow People. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are continuing with Nick Vimber 2, talking about the 1990s iteration of the British sci-fi classic, The Tomorrow People. My name is Drew, and I need my British friend who constantly disappears and shows back up soaking wet with seaweed. Miles, how are you, my friend?
Oi! Oi! That's the only thing the boys can say is oi or yank or a word I'm not going to repeat, although I may have misheard it, but I'm pretty sure I heard the right word.
Yeah, that definitely sounded like you said that word. But with, you know, who knows anymore.
It was 92, so I could also see why that might have like passed at the time.
Yeah. Anyway, but we're
at the
talking
same time,
about.
I'm like, I'm just like, what's happening right now? Because like I'm kind of like, you know, multitasking for a brief second. And then I, because this is the second time these guys have chased these kids on the bus. And then I just hear him utter a specific F word. And I was like,
he did not.
I rewound it. And I'm like, okay, I thought I heard this. And I'm pretty sure I'm correct.
He did not just say that, did he? But do you know.
A funny thing happened on the way to the forum. And if you had asked me last week, because I know this is one you have been like really gunning for quite some time.
Yeah.
I would have told you I have never seen an episode of this show. And I would be 100% wrong. Because as soon as I heard that music, I was like, and saw that kind of ocean opening, and I was like, wait a minute. And it's, again, now Welcome Freshman, I knew I watched. I just thought I forgot all of it, and I didn't. This was legit a like zooming in on the iris and then flashing through time and be like, oh, I absolutely remember this show.
And what's funny to me is how much about this show that I have just fully forgotten, but how much of it
I forgot everything outside of what we watched, but I was like, oh, no, I do have memories watching this show.
I know I said that I remembered this show feeling like it didn't have an ending, and I think I understand why that was the case now. Because I'm fairly certain I only ever saw these first five episodes. I don't think I've seen anything after.
There's a jump between them, first and second period of stories, right?
So the original show aired in 92. Its second season recorded in 93, but didn't air until 94. And there was also apparently a production company change because the original production company lost the rights to the show. So that probably almost certainly factored into things. But Miles, this was my first encounter with the Tomorrow People. Had you ever heard about the Tomorrow People outside of the context of this particular 90s iteration?
I have seen the name bandied about willy-nilly. But I have never taken the time to sit down and watch it. Because like the original run was like seven or eight seasons, right?
It was seven or eight seasons. Series, Jason.
Series. We're talking about a British show.
But yeah, it was a British sci-fi series, seven seasons, in the 1970s about, you know, humans that were taking the next step in evolution. Homo superior, if you will. And
shut up.
Well,
do they actually use the phrase homo superior?
Not only do they use the phrase homo superior, Miles,
in the American version,
they don't use it in the American version yet.
Okay.
But
That's fine. Because I was going to say, they would have gotten the pantsuit off of them in the 90s.
Well, they wouldn't have. And here's the reason why. Roger Price, who created the Tomorrow People in the 1970s, was working on something with David Bowie. And something happened. They were having a... they were having a conversation, and the phrase "homo superior" came up. David Bowie included it in that song, "Oh, You Pretty Things," and that in turn inspired Roger Price, the creator, to go and make the Tomorrow People TV show.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it interesting?
I still think in America they would have had some litigation if Marvel had wanted to, because I think they might have trademarked that term.
I mean, I don't know whether or not Bowie beat him to it.
I actually don't know either.
There's prior art there, certainly, because that song was in 71, so I don't know. I'm sure you're looking it up. Fun other thing.
Oh, no. I was just looking to see what album You Pretty Things was on. Honky Dory. Okay.
Yeah. Funny thing, Roger Price, creator of the Tomorrow People, he was a creator and writer of a lot of other TV shows. You know another show that he happened to be involved in the creation of?
What's that?
You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh, interesting, because one of the cast members is from You Can't Do That on Television.
Which one?
Megabyte.
He was on
Where You Gotta Start.
I didn't clock that. That makes total sense, though, because he is extremely Canadian, despite the fact that he's from Vermont, end quote.
That I mean, his whole like childhood run was like, yeah, he did that. He had, you know, I knew him specifically from Are You Afraid of the Dark and specifically The Tale of Laughing in the Dark, or as I just say colloquially to people so they remember it, is the Zeebo the Clown episode.
Is that one of the ones that we watched for the show in one of the prior Movembers?
We absolutely must have. I can't imagine us doing an episode on Are You Afraid of the Dark and not including that one.
Yeah. Well, so to the Tomorrow People, to get back to where we were, this 1970s iteration of the Tomorrow People was about these human beings that were quote unquote breaking out. Now, this is a phrase that is not uttered in the 90s version until like the fourth season, it said for the first time. But it's basically young adults awakening to their powers, you know, around puberty. Interesting that that's when that happens, isn't it? Nobody else has ever done that. So again, I'm calling out the X-Men, I'm calling out Marvel. Granted,
I mean it's a very popular thing to do and always has. But I mean, even got the Teen Titans.
I'm picking. But
I mean, the X-Men in particular. I think that was what 63.
Was it that early?
63 was the X-Men number one.
Interesting. Anyway, so you've got. So you got people that are awakening to superpowers, and there are some rules that they have. And one of the most interesting rules, and it's something that's kind of bandied about in this 90s version, is that they don't have the instinct to kill another being.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that in the original series, they even talk about if even accidentally a Tomorrow person caused the death of another human being, they would literally go insane because their brain couldn't handle what they had done. That's not really brought up much in what we watched of this new series, but it's definitely
the idea is brought up that they can't kill people. All through what's his name, Adam. Yeah, Adam, who's also like the one who introduces the phrase Tomorrow People with. Does he say that's what the aliens call them, or does he just say, "Oh, I came up with that"?
I don't remember what he says, but Kevin, the one of the newer Tomorrow People, despite the fact that they're all kind of new Tomorrow People, says that the aliens call us the Tomorrow People. So,
okay. Because the entire time I'm like, all right, everybody fool yourself. Okay, we're the tomorrow people.
Yeah. So in the 70s, they have powers. They have psychic powers. They also have stun guns because they can't kill anything. And they go to a place called the lab that has a talking computer named Tim. And they basically go around solving problems. They also have these belts that allow them to teleport. Well, flash forward to the 1990s, and Roger Price, the same guy who created it, was asked, because apparently they were running the 70s version on Nickelodeon. I don't recall this running.
I have no memory of that, but I believe it.
I believe it, too. It's one of those things where we're talking 1992. I may have conscious memory starting in 1990, maybe 89.
Did it specify whether or not it was aired at in the Nick at Night slates, like the late at night stuff?
It would have been Nick at Night. I don't even know if Nick at Night well, I guess it existed then.
It definitely existed. They may not have called it Nick at Night when we were talking about it, because there was a point on Nickelodeon television where they would just start playing old stuff. I know at one point they started branding it Nick at Night, and it's like, oh, this is for your Nickelodeon for your parents.
Yeah.
You know.
So but regardless, You Can't Do That on Television was all over early Nickelodeon. And
yeah,
this guy was involved in that too. So whether it was this show in particular or You Can't Do That on Television, they were, you know, that was the thing. And he decided to kind of reboot this concept of the Tomorrow People. So he kind of slims down the cast. He decides to completely reboot. So there's no unique character. There's no identifiable characters from the original show. You know, it's not a remake. It's just a full reboot. And basically they no longer have to use a technology to teleport. They can just do it themselves. They also have healing powers, and all sorts of other things they can do. One character in this show comes back from the dead, which is apparently so wild that they dialed back their powers to keep them from being able to do that again in the future. And they don't have any weapons. They don't actively attack anybody. They just use their wits to solve problems. Instead of a talking computer named Tim, they get transported to an alien spaceship that's on a South Pacific island that they land in the ocean every time, which is highly annoying. And apparently in the later seasons, they just decide, oh, we're just going to teleport straight to the ship. And that's really sort of the core concept of the Tomorrow People. And as we get down into it, we need to talk about our cast of characters. So the Tomorrow People was set up also in the idea of episode chunks. These were all I feel like it might have been a movie, but it was 5 episodes long. So it was definitely something that was kind of a start to finish story. And over the course of 3 seasons, they basically told 5 different 5 episode arcs. And we'll talk about some of the characters and who and what is going on with that. But the cast of the show, do you want to go in order? Or do you want to go in kind of how they appear?
However you want to do it.
Yeah. So
I have no preference.
Yeah. So basically we're introduced first off to 2 of our core characters, Kevin, who is, played by Adam Pearce. This is literally Adam's only credit on IMDb. whether this was his first time acting or not, I don't know the answer to that question, but yeah, he is effectively one of our Tomorrow People. And he and Lisa, who is in Virginia. Yes, Virginia, not the UK, Virginia. She and Kevin both break out and teleport for the first time in this first episode. We also have Adam, who's played by Christian Schmidt. I don't know how you pronounce that. He is an Australian actor. He is notable for being on the Australian soap opera Neighbours, which literally the...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was where he got his start, and he was apparently pretty popular in the UK as a result of that. Literally, the only other thing I know about Neighbours is that it's a very long-running show in Australia, and that Margot Robbie also got her start on that show.
Yes. The reason I ever knew about it is because Natalie Imbruglia got her start on that show.
I'm not sure I knew Natalie Imbruglia was Australian.
Yeah, she was a pretty popular, I think, Australian figure before she became kind of an international pop star.
Interesting.
So yeah,
you can't always tell with singing voices.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I beg you to remember an interview with her, because I know I've seen them, but I probably haven't seen them in 35 years. So it's like, you know, and I loved Natalie Imbruglia back in the day. But yeah, Neighbours is massively popular British soap opera that has produced a lot of their big talent.
And so last but not least, we have Christian Tessier playing Megabyte. What a name for the 1990s.
Oh, it is 100% an adult, like, invented nickname for a kid.
Yes.
That a kid should think is cool at the time. Like, this is Burger King Kids Club level naming.
but we also learned that his real name is Marmaduke, that he hates. So obviously,
You know what? If my name was Marmaduke, I would also choose Megabyte.
If my name was Marmaduke, I'd just make a big sandwich.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, the kids weren't being like self-deprecating and aware about that kind of stuff as much in the 1990s. You were really supposed to be embarrassed by that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm like, nah, yeah, own it. Or go by Duke. The end.
Oh, and I mentioned Lisa, but Kristen Ariza plays Lisa. She is an American actress, and in fact has done got some of her start in Atlanta theater, having grown up in Florida, which is kind of neat. But
Southeast represent.
But yeah, since we have teleporters, we are kind of all over the planet. We have these three stories kind of happening at one time. You've got Adam, who is really our first tomorrow person, and we don't really get a lot of Adam. He is kind of simultaneously the weird mentor to all of these people, but
the funny thing is like, he's only been there about like 10 minutes longer.
Yeah, he also lives on the island. He's got a tent. Everybody else just teleports home. There's something about that I feel like we maybe don't ever find out. I don't know.
I don't know. I've not watched past this point, but yeah, I did find that. I think he probably also feels like, oh, I can't go anywhere because they're going to find me.
Maybe. We do also learn from the bad guys that they've killed a couple of these kids that we never see on screen.
Almost the way that line is delivered is pretty gleeful. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you're a little too strong for the lad. And I was like, all right, well, The lack of remorse tells me all I need to know about you, sir.
Yeah, you mean Captain Panaka from episode one?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Hugh Quarshie plays Professor Galt, that we will get into. He's one of the big bads of a couple of big bads in this show. Yes, you've got Adam on the island exploring and finding the ship. You've got, effectively, you've got Kevin and Megabyte, who... Megabyte is realizing at a sleepover that Kevin has psychic powers, and maybe the scene that I remember the most vividly from this before rewatching it.
With the playing cards.
And it's a five of hearts. It's a king of diamonds. And then Megabyte looks down at a magazine that has a red race car on it with the number five. And he looks at that and he makes eye contact with Kevin. He's like, the five of cars? I actually like that. It works really well for me. I thought that was a very clever moment in the show. That's really where Adam is kind of, you know, freaked out by his powers and figuring out, but he's also kind of excited about it. Kevin's very freaked out about having powers and doesn't want to be psychic, but Megabyte, who doesn't have powers, is all for it, wearing his Ren and Stimpy t-shirt. He thinks it's awesome, and he wants to continue to figure out how those powers work. And meanwhile, you've got back over in the U.S. in Virginia, definitely Virginia, Lisa, who is being talked into a talent show with a big Hollywood producer by her mom. As she gets on stage, she is freaking out, trying to sing, and her high school bully is in the audience, and she knows she's going to get made fun of for doing this because all the other kids doing this are like,
is she a bully or a friend? I couldn't tell.
She was picking on her, dog. She was.
Yeah,
she,
but I couldn't tell if that was like a friendly picking on her or not.
If
like,
it was a if it was a friend, she wouldn't have been that embarrassed.
It's also 1990s kids television, and kids, like, you know, you're supposed to be embarrassed by any weird slight. Like,
fair.
These days, a talent show, you're not going to be that nervous about going in front of it. You're like, meh, you know.
Yeah.
These clowns.
So, but I guess another facet to this is that Kevin has been having dreams about Lisa. They seem to have some sort of psychic connection, as all the Tomorrow People eventually do in this show. And this is another thing that I really like that they do. They have the right time zones. It's night in the UK when it is afternoon
daytime
in Virginia.
America.
So,
quote unquote Virginia.
Quote unquote Virginia. We're going to get into why we're talking about, we're saying that over and over again. I know. Sorry. But Lisa's getting on stage and she's freaking out about performing at the same time that Kevin is, you know, basically trying to go to sleep after being kept up by Megabyte playing the Nintendo Entertainment System.
And playing the first Mario with bleeps and bloops that do not sound anything like the first Mario.
Nope. In season 2, episode 1, Kevin is playing the Sega Genesis and Sonic the Hedgehog. So... I'm just
bleeps and bloops that don't sound like Sonic the Hedgehog.
I can't recall it. I only watched a second of it, so I don't remember if you actually hear anything.
Well, if I don't hear that sweet, sweet Green Hill Zone song, I'm done.
But anyway, so as Lisa panics and freaks out, she teleports. And as Kevin understands that she's freaked out, he teleports, and all of a sudden, they've teleported to this other place, this island, and we learn that Kevin can't swim, and so they effectively rescue each other, or she rescues him, and they're talking, and they realize they each know each other's name without being asked, and this is one of the dumbest things that I can't believe they paid off, Megabyte is asking his mom if Kevin can stay over, and his mom is on the phone. They're in Scotland.
And you hear that typical on the line.
Yeah, God, that annoyed me so much, but it made sense. It was the 90s.
I love it.
Kevin's mom
it's
asks,
such Nickelodeon thing.
Yeah, or Megabyte's mom asks if Kevin wets the bed, and of course Megabyte's like, no, he's not that little.
Yeah.
But then of course Kevin, when Kevin and Lisa are talking, they both think they're dreaming, and she's like, well, slap me and wake me up. And so he just kind of pats her on the face.
Slaps the crap out of him.
And then she's like, no, you have to slap me for real like this. And she rears back and slaps him, which causes him to teleport back to Megabyte's house. Of course, now he's soaking wet and covered in sand and seaweed. And he is then, of course, wet the bed. It's very funny. And that's really where we get kicked off, as we have these sort of stories kind of going around and intertwining, because Lisa disappeared in front of so many people. It has drawn the eye of the bad guys of the show. The DIS is the British arm of something that I think was the American arm is different. But then there's even a third factor.
Yeah, there's a third party. There's some really rich old Downton Abbey lady that also hops into helicopters and shoots at kids, which is pretty hilarious, honestly,
so
conceptually.
I have an honest question, and this is we're going to jump right to the end here. There's a moment, I didn't realize that she was in America until the time zones matched up for her to be in America.
Oh, right.
But there's a point where she is playing chess with someone who looks just like Queen Elizabeth. Was that intended to be that she's playing chess with Queen Elizabeth?
I think so. And like, and also she reminded me of Alice in the Brady Bunch for some reason.
It was like when she is shooting garden gnomes with this pistol, like this she's got this
get the Luger.
She's got this Desert Eagle pistol and she's popping garden gnomes.
I also love how they're clearly exploding these things because you see like the fire like blast them open.
Oh, so funny.
Like, yeah, bullet doesn't do that.
It's so funny. But yeah,
it's very funny.
Because Lisa has disappeared in front of a big group of people, the bad guys, who we learn have been studying and trying to capture these teleporters, these Tomorrow people. That sort of leads us on the sort of wild goose chase that this ends up becoming, as you have Megabyte and Kevin taking a plane to the U.S. And definitely landing in Virginia and not Florida, because that card certainly didn't have Florida tags on it.
Not only that, but like, I also love, like, there are so many things that is clearly it's 1992 and we are a devil may care world, because yeah, these two children use Megabyte's father's flyer miles to fly to Virginia. Also, when Megabyte is taken by the bad guys, they shove him in a suitcase and carry him on the plane when they ask if, you know, if there's anything of note in their checked bag or in their baggage, and they're like, no. And you hear the kid like screaming in the thing.
We also learn that the thing that he's got on his head could explode at any point.
Right, so this kid is wearing a bomb and they cart him on the plane. I sometimes forget, even though I lived most of my life to a point before 9/11, but like how wild that time could be. Like, you could just do that. You know,
I mean, there was a point where you could just go to the airport and be a cultist and hand out flyers for things.
Yeah,
that doesn't exist anymore. Like, those people aren't at the airports anymore.
Yeah, because they get carted off.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about that is to make sure that the timing for everything seemed right. Did you clock the plane that the bad guys took Megabyte back to the UK in?
No.
It was the Concorde, which could make the flight in 2.5 hours.
That's pretty cool. So one thing I like about this series, and I really do appreciate this about it, is it does feel like I'm watching a television version of a lot of the very popular book series that were around in the 90s that were fairly serious and chronicled the adventure of these kind of like, you know, kid refugees or soldiers, whether it's Animorphs or anything like that. Like, I appreciate that this show takes itself seriously, no matter how silly some of the acting is or how some daft some of the ideas or payoffs are. The show does take itself with a modicum of severity, and I think that's really, really important to the audience, the intended audience. If I'm 9 years old watching this show, I am wrapped in this drama. Like, it's a soap for kids.
They also don't bandy about with certain things. Like, you literally see Lisa teleport, because one of the big things that they say until they get practice with teleporting is that they're going to teleport back to the place that they originally disappeared from. And when Lisa teleports back to the stage in the high school, they're ready to capture her, and they literally electrocute her while this is going on.
They threaten to murder her mother.
They threaten to kill her mom, and they use, like, that.
They use the K word. They say, "We are going to kill your mother," and I'm like, all right, Nickelodeon. But I also do appreciate that, like, shockingly enough, when twists happen, like when they reveal that the big bad general is Megabyte's dad, I was like, okay, they didn't really telegraph that at all.
But
like,
we
know that his dad like is not always there or whatever. I just didn't anticipate that that character would actually play into this series of events. And I have to say, I was legit surprised. The twist got me.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was great. And I also liked that we do find out that the real big bad of the show that has been working for General Damon, Megabyte's dad, has been going rogue and working for this third party. So his dad's not so bad. He's not really one of the bad guys.
From what we have seen, the dad seems to actually be one of the good guys and had good intentions scientifically for these kids. Because like he didn't authorize all the stuff that was happening. He's like, no, we just wanted to like, you know, figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
The one reveal that I don't think felt earned to me is the reveal that Megabyte also can teleport.
I honestly,
I don't hate the decision. I do think it feels like Deus Ex Machina.
Well, that's exactly what it is for sure. But I like the idea that they led up to it for the entire, he doesn't do it until the final episode.
No. And I agree with you. I think the timing is right, but it's like, we have never gotten any indication whatsoever. And I understand that you want to save that, but like, not even a whiff, like any indication that he's had any dreams or that he can hear people, like all the prerequisites that everyone talks about, Megabyte clearly wants and has said that he wants that. And we have no indication that he ever did.
Maybe it's his proximity to these people that can do these things that sort of awakened those powers in him.
It's very possible. I'm just saying, you know, for this viewing, that did not have the payoff. I enjoyed the moment, but the second I thought about it, I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. So this five episode arc ends with the kid saving the day. The creepy old lady who has a sniper rifle. It's not a sniper,
like,
it's a big assault
rifle.
The most
insane ammo I have seen.
Who's shooting at him from a helicopter. Like, they end up saving Lisa's mom, and they all teleport away, and it's a big, happy, fun thing with the whole family on the island as they sort of cheer and like, yay! And then the show ends. And this, Miles, is where I have a couple of questions. But one,
yep.
I legitimately think that I watched this show in its early run, because I kept talking about how I felt like I watched this show and thought it didn't end. And that's before I realized that it was only five episodes at a time.
Yeah.
And that there was a 2-year gap between what I watched and the next episodes. And I think by that point, I had moved on and didn't clock when it was on again. I legitimately wonder if I only ever saw these five episodes, which, to be quite honest, don't have a really hugely satisfying conclusion, and never went back.
You know, it's weird because I do feel like it just kind of, you know, yeah, it's an ending. That said, I really enjoyed my time and wouldn't mind to see what happens to these characters, despite the fact that most of them don't go on forward in season two.
Yeah. So of all of the characters, Adam and Megabyte are in all 26 episodes. Kevin, I now watched a little bit of season two, episode one. Kevin gets put into a coma and spends most of that season in a coma before disappearing from the show. Lisa disappears before season two, and we never find out why. She is not referenced at all. Most of the bad
guys. That's obnoxious because she's such an important, like, oh, we have to find Lisa, you know?
Yeah. She is replaced by a character named Amy, who even Amy is not in every episode after this. Played by actress Naomi Harris, who you probably know from a lot of stuff. She was the female lead in 28 Days Later. She was in, she's stayed busy. She's a working actress.
She's shrieking Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Yeah, she's, I mean, she, like, some of these actors, unlike a lot of the stuff that we watch for this month, some of these actors in this show continue to work, like both Megabyte and Amy, and I think even Adam, like, have maintained consistent employment.
Yeah, for sure. Like, Megabyte has done, like, he's done more. He's Canadian, and he's done more Canadian TV work, well, okay, if you know what I mean.
Sure. But even the evil doctor, like, he was in some British medical, like, drama that's, like, he's in, like, 600 episodes of that show that ran from, like, 2002 to, like, 2021.
I just know him as Captain Panaka from episode one.
He's been in a bunch of stuff that we've seen.
I'm sure he has. And,
including Highlander, the original Highlander movie.
Makes sense.
And, like, yeah, when I saw him, like, yes, Captain Panaka for sure, bro, because, like, he has all those faces and you're like, I know that guy. Like, what? Immediately I was like, oh, I know you. I don't know how I know you yet, but I know you.
in one of the you know, it says that Lisa's in six episodes, but the first season's only five. She's got to be in, maybe they're counting a flashback or something.
Yeah, she might appear in somewhere else. My biggest shock was when I'm looking at the cast list, I see the name Christopher Lee.
Yeah, dog.
And I'm like, I cannot imagine a better villain in a science fiction children's live action program than Christopher Lee, because he has the right amount of presence, but also the stage know-how to be just that right amount of evil camp without going full, like, Hammer Dracula. And I think that's such an inspired casting, and I love that he opted to do it.
And this would have been before his sort of return to major fame with,
yeah, this would have been before Star Wars, before Lord of the Rings. I mean, Christopher Lee was still a well-known and well-respected name. I'm not saying that
for sure, but those, he had also done a things... lot of B-movie nonsense.
Oh, I mean, he's a Hammer actor for sure. Like, I just referenced him. He was Dracula for like 15-20 years.
I'm just saying, like, this is 95. It wasn't until,
yeah.
Like, honestly, he probably went straight from this show into filming the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Possibly. I don't know how long it took for them to shoot that.
It took a while, but that first movie came out in what, 02?
01.
01. So maybe it was a little bit after that. But yeah, obviously we didn't see that, but he's one of the bad guys in one of the five episodes. But to get back to this first season, I have to ask you, Miles, any particular scenes or moments that really stuck out to you?
There's several. I wish I remembered all of them. There seems to be a glee about capturing and or attempting to murder children. It's not just one character. There is a psychotic security guard at a bus station, which is, like, one of my favorite scenes in what we watched. Kevin accidentally finds himself in this bus station.
Well, he finds himself in the bus station because he had previously, when they were getting beat up by the bullies, he teleported to the island from there. And so when he teleported back, he was back on the bus where he had teleported from.
Right.
And luckily he teleported to the bus and not the second floor of the bus position where he was, because he would have fallen to his death.
Yes. Well, this bus driver just actively tries to murder this child. And does so while, like, kind of singing a song to himself. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. And then he crashes into the cops after Kevin teleports again. And, you know, seems to be like, oh, what seems to be the problem, officer?
This is an official security officer's cap.
Yeah, that the one guard that tries to, who is it that teleports away that on the rooftop?
Oh, so that guard has a number of funny things. There's one moment where he's driving the A-team van.
Yes.
And he is.
Yes. He's gleefully trying to run over the kids.
Yeah, this is one of the moments where he is driving the A-team van on those ruddy streets of Virginia.
Been to Virginia? It's nothing like that.
Yeah, this is the big thing, gang. This is a British produced show, UK produced show. Weirdly, all of the points that they film in the UK seem like maybe they're not in the UK, and all of the points that they film in the US are definitely not in the US, and it's very, so very bizarre. Funny. The first point that you see that we are in America, there is a very British looking apartment building that doesn't look like an apartment building that would have existed in the state of Virginia in the year of 1992. But we know it's America because a guy dressed as Uncle Sam carrying American flag balloons just walks into frame and walks into the apartment. That is how we are introduced to Lisa. It is so, so strange. And you can see UK power outlets in that apartment too. It's so funny to me.
This whole iteration of reality seems to like operate on some sort of cartoon logic, because every bad guy is just like ready to run over a child, and I every single instance it's so hilarious to me. Like, because these guys are absolute cartoons. Like that bus guard is like just next level. Like what about you? I mean, like, those are the ones that really stuck to me, is like the over the top zaniness that this show got to. Like, people are pulling guns on each other left and right, but like in the most awkward ways.
I honestly loved every time Megabyte really did anything. I liked the Megabyte character a lot in this show.
I oddly did too. And like, he's very much playing, I mean, he had a type, because like the way he acts in his Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes is not dissimilar to the way Megabyte acts. He kind of has that vibe of like the actor that played Butnick, but that character's, or that actor's role in like T2.
Yeah,
he's just the best friend to like the person who's like got the shenanigans, but like is gonna lie to cops to save the world. Like that is 100% this kid. And like when he escapes from the bathroom.
Before he escapes from the bathroom, the thing that gets him captured is that he goes to bat for his friends, including yes. Lisa, who he does not know, in order to save her life.
Yeah, big ups to him. Yeah.
He saves Lisa's life by destroying the equipment that they are using to effectively almost kill her, to keep her trapped there so she can't teleport away. As a result, she and Kevin teleport back to the island, and he's stuck there. And so you have Galt, and I never wrote down her name when she appeared on screen, and I kept trying to find her in the credits so that I could look up to see if she had done anything else. The super tall blonde sunglasses.
Is she supposed to be an android?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Because she takes an explosive and then just kind of brushes it off for her suit.
Yeah, it was like, whether that was to show that she was an android, or whether that was to show that, is her name Gloria? Is that who that is? If it was, she hasn't done anything else.
That's what I'm trying to find this actor. So I can't find her.
I'm sure if we
scrub the credits, we'll probably find something for her.
Yeah, I need to go back and do that. But yeah, she was hilarious. So with all of that, then you have the combination of Professor Galt, her, and Megabyte, where they just have him in a big full body straitjacket with this dumb thing on his head that we learn might explode. He convinces them that he really needs to go to the bathroom in order to escape. And of course, this is a perfect opportunity to do so, because they don't want to follow him into the stall and all of that. Which, again, one of the funniest things about that is they run into the bathroom of the freaking Hard Rock Cafe. The Hard Rock, is it Hard Rock Cafe? Yeah, Hard Rock Cafe, London, which I'm not sure if that was the actual Hard Rock Cafe, London, Miles. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if that was the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah, I don't think it was either.
That then he runs out and runs down the street to randomly enter an under 18 only nightclub that's operating in the middle of what I presume is supposed to be a school day based on the timing of everything. It may be Saturday at this point. I don't actually know, but that such a place existed was very, very silly. And that's another thing that I have to say about Megabyte. He had some style. He was either wearing a Chicago Bears shirt or he was wearing a Ren and Stimpy shirt. He had an MTV jacket. Like it was all very, very 90s pop culture references. Kevin always wore some really nice shoes, though. Kevin was wearing Air Jordans, which was wild to me. I hope we got to keep them.
Yeah, Kevin gave me big like Archie Yates energy. That's the kid from like Jojo Rabbit and that new Home Alone.
I could see that.
If they rebooted that show, I could see him as the Kevin character, 100%.
Yeah.
Like I kept thinking about him. Although, God, that kid was whiny. Like I liked Kevin, but at the same time, like I wanted to slap him several times.
Well, to be fair to Kevin, he had a lot going on.
Yeah, I get it. I do. But yeah, I want to slap that kid. But I have to say, despite the fact I'm kind of with you where I felt the kind of ending, especially knowing that that's the end of the first kind of series or season, and it's only 5 episodes, it's a little unsatisfying because, especially because you know all these big changes are coming, but I do appreciate that, like, it establishes so much that you know that they're going to dig into later. It establishes rules. It establishes, like, personal, like, goals and, like, not attitudes. Well, attitudes as well, but, like, habits or, like, histories that will come up. And I really appreciate that a lot of times there is payoff for some of the things that we do learn. Like, I really generally did not think, because the absentee or my dad's working thing is part of so many like kid stories in general, especially at the time, that like I just never clocked that, oh, that person may actually be Megabyte's dad. I gotta say that was just a great reveal. It really was. But it's also like not a you're just like, oh wow, they pulled that off. Okay.
And his dad,
also that he beat up some children.
Yeah. And his dad instantly becomes a good guy at that point. Like it sort of solves the my dad's not here for me thing basically instantly.
I enjoyed that greatly. Because even when you first know that, like, oh, that's his dad, and he's kind of questioning Megabyte, you're like, uh-oh, what's about to happen to this kid? And then you find out, oh no, he's legit. He's actively been trying to do everything by the book and on the up and up. And it's everyone else and their cloak and dagger nonsense that has been causing these kids so much strife.
It's Colonel Masters that's been the problem the whole time. Yeah.
Which I swear to God, there are several times when the professor talks, is like preparing himself to talk to Colonel Masters, the way he pronounces Masters sound like Colonel Mustard to me. And I was like, I need to rewind.
Master.
Yeah. And I was like, did he say, no, he did not say what I thought he did. It's not like the bullies were like, they absolutely dropped the F-bomb. But I was just like, I thought he said Mustard at least twice. Which I was like, if this show named the Colonel Mustard, I would have been so happy. Which I also like Colonel Masters because he's very much we have the cigarette smoking man at home.
Yeah, so he is very much like that. The music in this show, outside of the main theme, is like Diet Twin Peaks music.
It really is. I thought the exact same thing, because it wasn't like a lot of the stock Nickelodeon stuff. There was this like on certain scenes, and I know exactly what you're talking about. But since we're talking about music, why do so many theme songs from the early 90s absolutely slap?
They're so freaking good. This theme song rules.
This theme song is great.
It's one of those things where I hadn't heard this theme song in 30 years, and it flew back into my brain like, oh my God, I know what this is.
Loved it. It's so good. I mean, it's not like, you know, like a generational bop in the way some of the theme songs from our childhood are, but like,
sure.
I hear that song and I'm like, this is good. This is like, you might hear this song in a club.
Yeah, every theme song we have had for Nick Vimber 2, whether it was Welcome Freshman,
Freshman still at the top. I'm sorry.
Space Cases has a phenomenal theme song.
Space Cases is also very good.
This theme song rules. I have to wonder what the last of our picks is going to be.
I don't remember that one being super. I remember it being memorable, but I don't think it was a banger. I could be wrong.
I don't remember it at all, which is probably the problem.
But right now, my ranking is Welcome Freshman, Tomorrow People, and Space Cases.
Yes, I'm in that same order. I could swap Space Cases depending on the version.
And the mood you're in. But yeah. But that Welcome Freshman theme is just that's a bop. It's also maybe it's because we came from that era, so it's such a style of the time that I love so much. But yeah. Like we're talking about, you know, the golden age of Nickelodeon, and like, just what a travesty it is that we have to like scour the internet to like find, at least this has a DVD release, shockingly enough.
Which it's not streaming anywhere, but there's somebody that's taking the DVDs and put them out for people to see.
I think you can buy and or rent this online as well, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't get that far.
Let me double check on that before here's the problem is there's multiple things called Tomorrow People.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. There was a 2012 version with Robbie ML as the main character.
So I'm not okay. So the 92 version, I don't think is streaming. I vaguely remember the Robbie ML version happening, because I was watching the CW at the time. But I mean, like a lot of those kind of one season shows, like I say, it looks super forgettable.
I remember it happening, and then I remember looking and didn't seem to be anything like the 1990s series.
It's because too old. Cass was too old.
Well, that, but it's also like, it's because it was based on the 70s seasons, not the 90s seasons.
Yeah.
So, because there are character names shared. I don't know if it's anything like a remake of the original 70s show, but there are at least characters that share the same first names between the 70s show and the 2012 version.
Mm.
And I don't know, there's a part of me that would be interested in going back to some of the 70s Tomorrow People. Just to see.
I could be convinced to check it out for sure. I'm not in a rush, but I would not mind doing that if we found the right theme.
We did British sci-fi recently. I could be convinced to do British sci-fi again.
Yeah, maybe if we did like a Across the Pond sci-fi month or something. I know we have British folks who listen to us from time to time, so if you have some ideas, be happy to hear them. Maybe not something as obvious as like, you know, Red Dwarf.
We've also covered Red Dwarf way back in the day.
I didn't.
Well, you didn't.
I think that was the dark times.
Yeah. Or maybe I just watched Red Dwarf with Patrick in college and I'm getting it confused.
It's also possible. And obviously some of the shows that we've already done. But
I could be convinced to do Blake 7.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of British sci-fi I've also always meant to get to. And because part of it was like, yeah, you might see it in reruns, you know, back when we were growing up. But like some of that stuff was kind of tough to hunt down, and it's less so now. So
if
folks know some like great British sci-fi shows that you feel like have been woefully like underseen, you know, don't throw Doctor Who with us. You know, come on, you know.
We're not Philistines.
I'd love to check it out because I do love my British TV. But on the subject, I think this was a cool thing for Nickelodeon to do at the time. It's also so starkly different from a lot of their shows, even their more older skewing shows. This it just feels different, even though it is a Nickelodeon production. It says Nickelodeon.
Well, it is a Nickelodeon production, but it is a Nickelodeon production with Tim's Entertainment and Reeves Entertainment. Sure. And
but like it still feels different than anything else that was on Nickelodeon at the time that I can think of.
And it also feels like it was filmed on film and not straight to video in Orlando.
I love looking up like this is filmed in multiple locations in England and Orlando, Florida, like
not Virginia.
Ye old Nickelodeon Studios or Universal Studios Florida, that was once used as an actual lot, and I miss those days because you know what, they turned out good TV. Like this is like I have quibbles with this show, and I haven't brought up a ton of them just because this show is very entertaining, and like it is very dry. It does have that British dryness, but once you start watching it, you're like you're really hooked. Like and campiness and all, like. You really are like, oh, I want to see what happens. And this show does a good job of like giving you cliffhangers, and they're not crazy cliffhangers, except for that one, I think the second to last or the fourth episode.
So one where Kevin almost gets hit by a bus.
Yes. Like they do.
Or not a bus, a Mack truck.
There's that. But like it's a very engaging show to watch. And I have to tip my hat to the team. They did a great job with that.
I fully agree. Like this is a show that just wouldn't get made today because
I also like the five episode arc format
is great. Honestly, five episode arc format could get made today. Like that's a Stranger Things arc.
that's a Netflix thing to do.
That's a Netflix thing. You know, but
take a full season and break it in half and call it two. Yeah.
All right, Miles, you and me tomorrow, people, 2026. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's find us some kids. Oh yeah. You've got kids. We'll do kids.
I'll cast my kids. They'll be tomorrow people.
I'll take my nephew. Hey, guess what you're doing this weekend?
Depending on how long it takes to do, my nephew might be able to be in it. And we'll use all the kids we know.
This is starting to go down a rabbit hole we probably shouldn't get down.
Yes.
It's starting to sound all a little
dark. All of this audio is going to get taken out of context by somebody.
But no, this was my biggest, I don't want to say my biggest surprise. This is my biggest surprise because this is a show that I don't remember watching. And I have to say, like, I already knew I liked Space Cases. I already knew I loved Welcome Freshmen. And I already know, no matter how I feel next week about the show that we're going to watch, I know when it was out, I loved it. This is the show that I don't remember that I watched until we started watching it, and like all of a sudden some memories started kind of flooding back. And I'm really impressed. And I think based off the two proper sci-fi shows that we watched, and maybe one more that we're going to get to, Nickelodeon had a pretty good grasp on kids sci-fi.
I mean, yeah, it really did for a little bit of that time. Let's face it, Nickelodeon had a really good grasp on a lot of kids' content.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the orange years, so yes, Nickelodeon knew they were doing, but still, just because kids are not serviced as much genre live action today in an easy to like curate environment, because now you gotta find a streaming service or whatever, like if it's Netflix or Paramount Plus or whatever you watch your stuff on, it's a lot more segmented. But the fact that there was a network that was geared towards younger viewers, that was churning out genre stuff that was not only like good, but like great for the viewers. And I am always constantly surprised. Like I'm always finding new ways to champion this era of television, because like every time I find something, I'm like, yeah, this is another example of why this was the best era for young television. And I think this show, Warts and All, is a great example of it.
Well, you say the term Warts and All, but Miles, I gotta say, and this is honestly kind of where I'm a little worried about next week's show. Because next week's show is the latest of the shows that we have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We like this. This show.
And possibly the most popular.
Yeah, probably of the shows that we watched for this Nickvember.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the lead actress was on the cover of TV Guide.
Yeah. What I mean by that is like this show ran from 92 to 95. Space Cases ran from 92 to 96. Welcome Freshman was 92 to 94, I think. Or 91 to 94. So we're really talking about the early 90s. And there's a point in the orange years where there's a bit of a transition as things have taken off.
This isn't in that era, though. Next week's show went from 94 to 98.
Right, but what I'm saying is the thing that I find that I'm loving about these shows that we are talking about this time, and really this extends to our previous, you know, conversations about things, is that there are warts. Not every performance is the most spectacular thing you've ever seen.
No, most of them are actually not that great, but they're enjoyable to watch.
Right. And that was true of, you know, I guess the one that maybe gets around it the most is Pete and Pete. Pete and Pete was a very solidly performed show, at least from the core cast. But I look at next week's show and I wonder, as this is a show that has a bigger budget, that has probably better special effects for any Nickelodeon show that we have seen so far, that made it to the cover of TV Guide, whose performer went on to be in some pretty big name Hollywood movies before taking some time off, before then returning. I think she
just left and came back. I think she wanted to go to college and stuff. She also had a stalking incident, I think, a couple times that involved the police.
That tracks. But yes, next week for our final poll for this year's Nickvember 2, we are covering the first four episodes of The Secret World of Alex Mack, a show that I have literally not seen in 20 something years. Because this is another one that never got a VHS release, never got a DVD release, is only available in these VHS rips.
Well, you said it never got a VHS release?
I don't think it did.
I think it did.
Oh, it did get a VHS. It did get VHS.
Yeah, it got because I own some. and it did get a complete series release by Mill Creek
actually,
in 2017.
This is saying that this is on Paramount Plus, but I don't think it is. So I'm gonna double check that real fast.
I see that you can purchase it on Prime. I don't think it's on Paramount Plus. But a complete series came out from Mill Creek Entertainment in 2017.
I'm wrong about that.
Probably because I knew that this one had like an actual. Oh man, you can get that for $14. Ooh, I'm going shopping. yeah, this. I'm gonna add this to my list. It looks like they're starting to add a couple of stuff. They got Hey Dude and everything.
Hey Dude's been on there, but
it's still surprising to see some of them.
Hey Dude is one that I've avoided because I just didn't like that show.
Oh, I mean, I also didn't care for it. I would be kind of curious to see it. But I am happy to see that at least next week's show, which we should probably actually finally name, got a actual complete series.
I did. I said The Secret World of Alex Mack.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
You were calling me on what I said. But yes, and apparently the you can purchase it on both iTunes and like $2.99 an episode. Golly, that's expensive.
Or pay $14 for the complete series on DVD.
Let me see if can you buy the full? You can't buy the full season. You have to buy it episode by episode. Good Lord.
That's insane to me.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, I'm going to, but I would buy the full series for $14 instead of protest.
Yeah. That would be the best quality of anything that we've seen so far. So I may investigate some of that. So yes, that's going to be next week, wrapping up The Secret World of Alex Mack, wrapping up Nick Vember 2. And in the meantime, if you miss us, you can find us in a couple of different locations, including themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of the show. You can find us on social media pretty much anywhere, either at themoreyounerd or /themoreyounerd. And you can email us, themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also check out our sister show. What's our sister show, Miles? I'll tell you. It's called Cosmic Crit. This is a show where we play tabletop RPGs, specifically the game Starfinder, and we are kicking off Starfinder 2nd Edition from Paizo, as we are creating new characters and doing a whole bunch of stuff for Starfinder 2E. Which is, of course, the Starfinder version of Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And you can find us there at CosmicCrit.com. If you go to CosmicCrit.com, and if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you can find our Cosmic Crit Discord. There you can go and you can find your own games of Pathfinder or Starfinder to play, or a couple of other games as well. Or you just talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we are going to end the show, as we always do, with a rousing...
Nerd out. Two nerd for y'all.